The Why Me Project, an exclusive presentation of Faith Strong Today.
I have a rule that you need to have as many pastor friends on your speed dial as possible, because it's like Jesus and then pastors. And so then that way they will put in a good word for me just in case.
I remember having a pastor and he said, don't call me pastor. That'd be like me calling you radio announcer Holly. Like, no one does that. So do you call your friends?
Can we start?
Okay. Radio announcer Johnny.
No, I don't like it. Never mind.
No.
All right.
Anyway, I just feel like having that in front of your name is like a lot of pressure. Maybe pastors love it, but for me, I would feel the pressure of it.
Yeah. So pastor, speaker, author, among other things, my guess is, and that would be Greg Lindsay, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Do you want us to call you pastor?
No, please don't. Call me Greg. When people do that, I say just Greg. Call me Greg.
Okay, just Greg.
Yes. Pastor Greg, sorry. We like to ask the skill-tested question because we never know where it's going to go, and that is, who are you and where did you come from?
Well, I'm pastor of a church in Colorado Springs called Discovery Church. I've been here 16 years. Mm. I'm married to Stacy for almost 40 years.
Wow.
I have four beautiful daughters, three sons-in-law, three average sons-in-law. No, they're really good guys. A boyfriend.
Mediocre at best.
Yeah. No, they're great. They're really great men. A boyfriend that looks like he's a keeper. We have seven grandkids, two more on the way, and a black lab named Bentley.
Aww.
Do you like the new one, the guy that's coming in? Because the other three are already married. This one, you kind of still have a...
You scare him away still?
Well, yeah. my youngest daughter Stella may watch this. So let's just say yes.
Yeah.
No, his name is Isaac, and he's a great young man. My other three sons-in-law have kind of taken him under their wing, and so they're shaping him up just fine.
Good.
I think that's heading towards him becoming a fourth son-in-law, and I think that's going to be a great thing.
No pressure, Isaac. No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure, Isaac.
Was pastor always the goal? I mean, there are some people, it's like the calling to pastorize, and others it just it kind of falls into place. When was that on your heart?
Well, that's a great question. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky. I went to a great church there. Bob Russell was my pastor and a mentor of mine. He led a church from 100 to 22,000 over the course of 40 years.
Oh, that's like a whole city in Canada.
Yes, it's a big, and it's like 50,000 now in multiple campuses. But Bob was always, well, let me back up a little bit. My mom was always like, you're going to be a preacher someday. Hmm. And I was like, no way. I don't want to be poor. I want to make money. And my dad was a World War II vet. He was in Patton's Army in World War II. And he always talked about the Marine Corps. So I grew up wanting to be a Marine. And so 1985, Stacy and I got married in 1984. 85, I went to Officer Candidate School in the Marine Corps, was set out on that path. My wife, Stace, got promoted to management at UPS. And so I changed directions and went to law school.
Okay.
I became a trial attorney. The whole time that was going on, Bob was in my ear, man, you need to lead a church. You should be a pastor. You need to lead a church. You need to lead a church. I'm like, nope, I'm good. I kind of like my life right now. And so that went on for about 10 years. So I was about 10 years into practicing law. Actually, I back up. That was about 7 years in. And Bob came to me one day and asked me to be a part of leading as a volunteer, as an attorney, be a part of leading a men's ministry in that church, which was about 10,000 people at the time. Hmm. So that was kind of my step into ministry. I was still an attorney vocationally, but doing ministry for the first time pretty heavily as a volunteer. And then they asked me to take over a singles ministry while they were looking to hire a singles minister. So I had a group of maybe 50, 20 and 30 something single people. And over the course of the next year, as they were looking for someone, that ministry grew to like 150 to 200 20 or 30 something year old single people. That's when I started teaching the Bible for the first time. And it really all came together. It was like a closing argument, but I believed in my case every single week.
Huh.
And I felt like actually in the second week of teaching that singles ministry, I felt like God was saying, this is who I created you to be and what I created you to do. Hmm. So So we started to, one day I'm sitting in my law office. I had my own firm at the time, had about, I think, three attorneys working for me. And a guy called me out of the blue that I'd never talked to before from New York, Long Island. Long story short, he said, "Hey, just got off the phone with your pastor, Bob. He told me you would be a great church planter. Are you ready to move to another state and plant a church?" And I said, "I have no idea what that even means."
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, do you have about an hour to talk?" And I shut the door and we had a conversation and I got so excited. I told him, I said, "Look, man, I've got four kids, baby, newborn baby, four daughters. We've got a pretty good life. I can't raise my family on $40,000 a year. I just can't. I can't do it." He goes, "Let's talk about that." And so he started painting the picture for me of what church planting was for them. He led a church planting organization in New York that did church planting around the country. And he talked about bringing multiple churches together and having a staff of three or four or five people to launch the church. And I got really excited. And I'll tell you this part. I went home that night. We got the kids all settled in bed and I was down in the kitchen and Stace comes into the kitchen and I was cleaning up the kitchen. I said, "Hey, babe, can we talk about something for a minute?" She's like, "Sure." And I said, "Hey, what do you think about me wrapping up my law practice and us moving to another state and starting a new church?"
Did she laugh at you?
Well, it wasn't really a laugh. It was kind of a look. And she said, "I tell you what, when God tells me we're supposed to talk about that, we will." Mm. And she just walked out of the room. Well, long story short, over the course of the next year or so, Paul was the guy who called me. He started putting churches that were looking to plant churches on my path. And I started getting phone calls. And Stacy started to see, man, God's really in this. And so we started to talk about a plan. It was probably 2 or 3 years later that we moved to North Carolina and we planted a new church.
Hmm.
So that was kind of the transition story.
That's a big jump.
It is a big jump. Yeah, people say it all the time. I said, you know, you can be a lawyer and be a Christian. It's hard.
Really?
It's kind of that I have a needle thing, but it's possible.
Yes.
Like, here's the thing, though. Like, Holly and I have said this many times before. We're in radio, a form of ministry.
Mm-hmm.
We're not rich. We are making Jesus dollars. You were a lawyer. You had it set. Now you're making Jesus dollars, Greg. I mean, you went the opposite way.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And we've often felt that along the way.
Yeah, but it's always incredible how God, when he calls us to a particular vocation and a pathway, how he provides and the ways you least expect it. Cause I'm sure there's a point where you're thinking, did we just make the biggest mistake of our life? Like little.
There's been several times.
Yeah. What's one standout moment, if you can narrow it down to one, where you just saw God's hand in that decision and it gave you the peace you needed to take that next step?
It was actually a really hard moment. So, fast forward the story a couple of years in North Carolina, we launched this new church. It went gangbusters. In a year, we were running 600 to 700 people. Wow. We had money in the bank, things that you just don't typically think of a lot of times in church planting world. God's hand was all over it. And I crashed and burned and had an affair. And immediately resigned. Our marriage was obviously, I thought I was going to lose everything. That was touch and go for a while. I started counseling with a great counselor. Actually, I started with the guy I couldn't stand, but God took care of that. That's a long story. I don't know if you want to hear it, but I got hooked up with a great counselor, and Stacy eventually, somewhere a couple months in, said, "We're going to try to make a go of this," because of the changes that she saw happening in me. I'm out of ministry for 3 years, and that was tough. I had passed the point in time where I would have reciprocity to practice law in North Carolina. And so I had a friend come alongside of me who owned a mortgage business. And so I jumped into the mortgage business because I'd done a little bit of real estate closing work. Well, a couple of years later, he said, "Hey, man, I'm getting out of the business. You want to buy this company?" So I got a couple of buddies and we bought the mortgage company. That was like 2007 when the whole mortgage world turned upside down. So we lost our shirts on that. About that same time, though, about 2 years into the desert for me, churches started to call. Mm. They say, "Hey, we heard about you. We heard a little bit about your story, but we're looking for a pastor." So we get, long story short, Discovery Church, the church I now get the privilege of leading, called. little church plant out in Colorado Springs, Colorado. They bring us out here. That's a long story. I'm their guy. They choose me. That's a miracle in and of itself, but story for another day. We get here, and I preach my first sermon on August 10th, 2008. The next morning, I go into the office for the first time. Someone is sitting in my office waiting to talk to me. It's like 7:30 in the morning. Hmm. The light to the office wasn't even on. There was just a window, so there was some daylight. I saw somebody's leg sitting in a chair. And so I flipped the light on. It was one of the people in the church already with their list of complaints.
Perfect.
Yes, my first day in the office. It was awesome. And so that same day, or maybe the next day, the chairperson of the search committee for the church came by and said, "Hey, can we talk for a few minutes?" And he said, he was just being awkward. I was like, "Dude, what's going on, dude?" And he goes, "Well, we haven't exactly told the church your story."
Mm. Ooh.
And I was like, what does exactly mean? And he said, "Well, we haven't told them. We thought you should tell them." And so in my mind, I'm going, wait a minute, you moved my family. And I got two daughters in high school and two in elementary school at the time. You moved my family across the country and announced us as the pastor. I preached my first sermon of the church, and none of these people know what I did as a pastor, that I crashed and burned. And I told him, I said, "Listen, here's the deal. Okay, I will tell them, but we got to do it quickly. We can't start to try to build something, to work with God in building something here without people knowing." And so in my fifth week, I'm getting to answer your question. Here it is. My fifth week here at Discovery, I preached on Peter's restoration from John 21, and I told my story. Mm. Two families left the church that day, and half the church left the family. Half the church left over the next 3 months. Mm. And so we went from 80 people to about 40 really quickly. And so I have lots of moments where I could say, yeah, I was questioning, what are we doing? That was one of them. I'm like, God, what are you doing? And the other part of that is, as a lot of people do, I had a lot of church hurt in that 3 years. I had people tell me I should never be in ministry again. I had a leader in the church that I crashed in tell me that I was outside the grace of God.
Oh.
I had someone else tell me that if I ever manipulated my way back into ministry, that God would never bless it. So I had a lot of chatter going on in my head and a lot of baggage anyway. And then I get out here and they haven't told the church, and that happens and people start to leave. And I'm like, what the heck are we doing? I remember our first Easter in Colorado Springs, we met in a high school. Crowd was miserably small for Easter. I mean, our church was probably 50, 60 people at the time. I don't know how many people were there that day, but we were still meeting in a high school. So we had a trailer we'd pull up, and we had to set up and tear down every week. And so we'd torn everything down after everybody'd left. And I'd always park my car way out from the high school in hopes that people would come and need those parking spaces closer to the building. And of course they didn't. So I walked to the door to leave the high school. I'm the last one there. And I pushed the door open, and this strong cold wind and snow just smacks me in the face. It had snowed on Easter. Mm. And I was just like, what the? And I don't know the rules with your podcast, so I'm trying to be a good pastor here. What the heck? Yeah, there you go. What the heck? You know, it's just like, God, what are you doing? And I told God, listen, I will walk away from ministry forever if you will get my family out of Colorado Springs. So I've had several moments. I'll tell you one more real quick. Probably 3 or 4 more months into the journey living out here, a pastor in town asked if we could meet. He'd heard about me. And so I went to his office, and I immediately discovered he had one serious character flaw. He was a University of Kentucky fan. Mm-hmm. And I'm a University of Louisville guy, undergrad and law school. So go Cards. And so I was like, oh, he's from Kentucky as well. So we had a great conversation. And I told him my story. He invited me to come speak to a group of pastors at an annual overnight retreat. There was a gathering of pastors in Colorado Springs that would meet about once a month for lunch. Then they had a one-night retreat out at Glen Eyrie. I don't know, if you've never been to the Springs, you don't know where that is. If you come to the Springs, you ought to go to Glen Eyrie. It's a beautiful spot.
Okay.
So we're at this retreat, and he introduces me, and I get up and I start to tell my story to this room full of probably 40 pastors. It felt like the movie Frozen. It was all of a sudden, I was like, oh no, I've made a mistake. I shouldn't have. it didn't go well. I went ahead. I finished it. I thanked them. I sat down. Only a handful of pastors talked to me the next 24 hours. And I left that experience, honestly, between us. I left that experience in my mind. I flipped them all off. And I said, screw you guys. I don't need you. We don't have to be friends. I'm just going to put my head down and do what God has called me to do. So I didn't get off to a good start at all in Colorado Springs, to answer your question. The church was broke. The guy that was the pastor before me that had resigned hired an associate pastor right before he resigned. So as soon as I got here, I mean, our annual budget was like $150,000 a year. We couldn't afford both of us. So we had to let him go. It was a train. I mean, you talk about a train wreck. So there were a lot of what is going on.
Yeah.
And so I finally just told God, I'll get out of ministry. Never look back. If you just get us out of this godforsaken city.
Yeah.
And it's funny because 5 years later, I would address that same group of pastors. Some of those guys that were there are now my best friends. And together we started this citywide movement called COS. That's the designation for Colorado Springs. COS, I love you. It's got about 100 churches involved working together in the city, working with government, working with business. It's an amazing thing, but it didn't get off to a good start.
When you came clean to your wife, did you think that you were ever going to save your marriage? Or did you think that your marriage was done and you're going to live your life as somebody who got divorced?
I thought for sure I was going to get divorced. And the reason why is because when we were young and she was chasing being a manager at UPS, I was a young attorney trying to make a name for myself. We had two young daughters at the time, very young. We were both working 60, 70 hour weeks. Things were hard between us.
No.
And there was a period of time for about 3 months where we even separated back then. And I'm like, this is it. There's no way. I've hurt her too deeply. I mean, after you tell her on a Friday night and then you watch her sit out on the back deck, this was North Carolina and it was in the summer, all night long and cry. And I tried to go out there several times and she didn't obviously want anything to do with me. But after you see your wife do that, I mean, I think it's kind of hard to think there's any hope for your marriage. Hmm. And, you know, so I was pretty hopeless and pretty desperate that it just wasn't going to work.
So then why do the counseling? I mean, if you thought that everything was going to be over, what's the point of doing the counseling then if you're just like, I'll just be a divorcee and we'll call it a day?
Well, that's a great question. And here's the answer. I couldn't understand why I did it. I had to get to the bottom of it. It was not who I wanted to be. You know, that's where a lot of Christians and even pastors chimed in and said, well, you're obviously a sex addict. You're obviously a porn addict. Neither one of those things were true. Mm-hmm. They weren't. I mean, I grew up like every other teenage boy interested in pornography, right? But then we didn't have the internet back then. It was more magazines stuffed in a clubhouse somewhere. But I wasn't addicted to it. I mean, to this day, I've done so much bad stuff, but I have never been on an internet porn site in my life. But I was labeled as that. You're obviously a sex addict. You're a porn addict. You're this, you're that. I knew none of that was true. At the core of who I wasn't a bad man. I was a broken man. And I didn't even have the language to say it at that time. But I had to get to the bottom, Johnny, of how did this happen? Why did this happen? I love my wife. I'm sexually attracted to my wife. I don't live in the desert sexually with my wife. What is going on? Was the question for me. This is not the man I want to be. It's not the husband I want to be. It's not the father I want to be. And so I can't, at that point in time, I can't control what she decides to do. And honestly, she'd be justified if she'd say, this is over. I still believe that. But I had to get to the bottom of this. And so that's why I started to work on me. Because I, you know, whether we continue to be married, I had four little girls.
Yeah.
And I knew who I wanted to be for them, that they were going to be in my life in one way or another. And I knew the man I wanted to be. And I wasn't that guy.
One of the things that, and I mean, Holly and I have had a number of different guests who we talk therapy, we talk going through counseling and that. It's not an overnight thing. You're not going to get good after one session. How long into counseling did you get starting to get those realizations of the man who you wanted to be and the man that you wanted to be for your wife?
That's a great question. I think it was probably about 3 or 4 months in that she was starting to see enough change in me to say, hey, well, you know what? I think we might want to try to make this work. I got to tell you this story because it's funny. So I got hooked up with my first counselor through the same leader in the church that told me I was outside the grace of God. And he told me, you need to see this guy because he won't like you.
That's encouraging.
Perfect. Yeah. And I was like, I'm this broken mess. And I'm just listening to whatever anybody tells me at this point in time. You asked me to do it, I'm going to do it. I went to see this guy. It was obvious. He didn't like me. And I'm going to tell you something. I couldn't stand him. So we met 2 times. It was a total waste of time. He was charging me. This is 19 years ago. He was charging me like $285 an hour, something ridiculous. I couldn't afford it. I don't have a job anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm paying this guy that doesn't like me. I don't like him. So it's a Sunday afternoon. My next counseling appointment is on Monday. I get a phone call from his wife. And she said, Greg, I'm sorry to tell you this, but my husband has been hurt in a boating accident this weekend. And he won't be able to see any clients for at least 6 months. And so I said, well, I'm so sorry to hear that, blah, blah, blah. Hung up the phone, and I may have done a happy dance in my kitchen I got that. Not because he was hurt,
right,
but because I got away from him, and I called a friend who actually was a PhD MD who taught at Duke in medical school. And he referred me to a guy named Rob, another counselor, who would be a part of changing my life forever. Mm. And that all happened within the first 3 or 4 weeks of the crash. So I get on this track with Rob, and Stacy started to see real changes in me. But I saw Rob for 3 years, like every week, sometimes twice a week. I saw Rob for 3 years. It began to change my that. And a good friend of mine took me back to John Eldridge's book, Wild at Heart. Mm. I had read it when it first came out, put it on the shelf and thought, good book. Man, when my friend took me back to it in my brokenness, it rocked my world. It changed my life. So I don't know if I could pinpoint when the shift was, but Stacy started to see enough change in me. And she believed at the core of who I was, she loved that guy. I was a good man. So she probably gave it a little bit more time and a little bit more chance than most would have. I don't really know a time period, but you know, I would say 3 or 4 months in, things started to shift, but my counseling journey was a long and hard one. One of the first things Rob asked me to do was to spend time sitting and thinking about all the hurtful moments I've had over the course of my life, going back as far as I could remember. He said, I don't care if you thought it should hurt or not, because, you know, as guys, we got the rub some dirt on it thing going. He said, write it down. And it was hard for me. I was like, this is ridiculous. And I'm like, dude, my marriage is falling apart. I don't need you to help me work on my mommy stuff. I just don't. And he's like, nope, this is the path we're going to take. And he took me all the way back in my story. And I started to write down these moments. And then as I did that, I'm reading John Eldridge's work again. I'm starting to connect the dots between the moments and say, you know what? Those weren't just isolated moments of pain. The enemy connected those moments in my story to build a case against me. And over the course of my life, here's what happened. I grew up believing I was a little skinny, scrawny, redheaded, freckle-faced boy. I was 5'9", 114 pounds as a freshman. And most girls chose to put me in the friend zone. But I grew up with this idea that I'll always be weak. I'll never be strong. I will never be attractive. And no women will ever really be attracted to me. And my wife's beautiful. If you see her, she's a knockout. I don't want to be the pastor who says I got a hot wife, because they all like to say that, right? My wife is beautiful. She's a beautiful lady inside and out. And I married a beautiful girl, and it wasn't enough because I never addressed the brokenness. And the trigger that set everything on fire in my life was someone we met in a movie theater as a church. It was an old style theater. It wasn't theater seating. It was just a slope floor, 6 venues and a middle lobby. I was out in the lobby, and a woman in the church came up to me one day and said, you really look nice today. And that sparked something in me. It was like, tell me more. And I ended up doing some counseling with she and her husband over some stuff. Mm. And you can write the rest of the story.
Yeah.
I'm not excusing it. I'm not minimizing it. It's wrong at every level. I own my sin and everything I've done. I was a broken man, broken, invalidated man with a story that I had no idea of that made me vulnerable to that. I take total responsibility for it. I'm not trying to abdicate responsibility here, but I'm just saying I had no context for the thing that I'm writing about in my book, my story. You know, the enemy, he just camps out there and he just wreaks havoc on all of us. I talk about it in the book, you know, Luke chapter 4, which is one of my favorite passages where Jesus is tempted in the wilderness. And as a kid growing up, hearing that over and over again in church, it always was, okay, when I'm tempted, I got to have the right verses to cite back to the enemy and that'll shut him down. Well, the interesting thing about the passages is the two temptations out of the three, where before he asks him, tempts him, he says, if you are the Son of God, if you are the Son of God, then do this. He's coming after what God just did when Jesus got baptized. He validated his son. This is my boy whom I love. I'm pleased with him, right? He's coming after Jesus's identity. We see the assault on our behavior. Hey, go look at that, smoke that, drink that. We don't see the assault, the daily assault on our identity. And so all this, I had no context for anything I'm talking about today when all this happened 19 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and it's interesting too. That was 19 years ago. And today we see a lot of pastors who are under attack, who have done things that have been very damaging overall to the faith. And it seems mm-hmm. like an epidemic of sexual mm-hmm. morality in the church.
Yep.
Just from like your experiences, why do you think this is?
I think it's what I'm talking about. It's brokenness and story. The reality is for all of us, I think, that we all grow up as invalidated people with something to prove.
Hmm.
One of the chapters in my book is called Something to Prove. And, you know, I know with my own experience at Discovery Church, in our heyday at the end of 2017, there was a weekend on a Saturday night I was preaching and I thought, man, good crowd here. Long story short, we ended up being just shy of 3,000 people for the weekend. And I thought, wow, we're gonna break 3,000. And it felt good for about 10 seconds. And then I realized, man, there's a lot of consumers, a lot of spectators here, with all due respect to anyone that was there that weekend. But that fed something in me. What I realized was that being a part of a mega church, leading a church from 50 people to 3,000 was, I mean, there was a part of that that was exhilarating. There was a big part of that. Our church in 2014 was the eighth fastest growing church in America. It was the 50th fastest growing church in the next year in 2015. That was feeding something unhealthy in me. And God really started to poke at me with that. And so in 2016, I told the church one weekend, I said, we're not going to submit our numbers this year. I said, I feel like that's feeding something unhealthy in me. And it really, really was. And so what happens is, just like with anything else, you know, all the things that come with ministry, successful ministry, they're feeding something in you that most of us are really not aware of. I mean, I read a book when I was in the desert by Reggie McNeil called Practicing Greatness. And he talked about seven spiritual disciplines. And, you know, I'm expecting to hear the same old, honestly expecting to quit reading the book after the first chapter. But the first one was the discipline of self-awareness. And I was like, man, this dude is onto something. Hmm. You know, this rest of your story piece. I mean, going back into our childhood, walking through our teenage years, all these, what are the messages that you have believed to be true about you? What sort of agreements have you made with the enemy about that? I agree. I'm always going to be this. I'm never going to be this. And then we look for things in our lives to prove that that's not true. And ministry has a great way of doing that for us. Oh, that can't be true, because look at me. Look what I'm doing. Look at the people I'm impacting. Look at the people I'm affecting. You know, and I'm not sure that's the formula for every one of them, but I'm going to tell you, I think it's the formula for the majority of them. They're not bad people. They're not bad men. They are really broken men. And there's a difference.
I don't want to be braggadocious, but Holly and I, top 20 podcast in Madagascar.
Wow. Wow. I am so honored.
Yeah. That is. Moving on, though. Your book, the rest of the story, which is out in May. Why write it, though? Because you had to go to your wife and have this conversation. Mm-hmm. Then you had to go to your church and have this conversation. You continually just bring up the past and you have to relive this over and over. I mean, just put it in a box and bury it in a corner somewhere. Instead, you're like, no, here's the story and here's everything that went on.
Well, two thoughts on that. The first is, because my story is not just for me, and your story is not just for you, that one of the reasons why God leads us through this stuff is to help other people that are going through it. People who've been divorced can offer help to people who are going through divorce that I never will be able to.
Yeah.
And people who've lost a child can speak to people who've lost children like I can't. My story is not just for me. And honestly, because thousands of people have experienced life change because they've heard it. It's still very public in our church. I talk about it frequently. I typically will bring it up on Easter and Christmas because we're getting the opportunity to talk to people who only come to church a couple times a year. And I don't, and I want to dispel what we started that this conversation with. There's Jesus, then there's pastors. There's Jesus, then there's everybody else, including pastors, right? Craig Rochelle talks about the mystique of the pastor and how in seminary, he had a professor say, you must guard the mystique of the pastor. Well, I'm going to throw the BS flag on that. Right? I'm trying really hard to be like Jesus. I'm not Jesus. And so my story's helped a ton of people. Our story, I should say, Stacy's the real hero in the story, she and Jesus. And I say that all the time, and I mean it. What I would say to anyone reading the book is go to the note from Stacy at the end, the last three or four pages, because she starts her note by saying, just last week, my youngest 21-year-old daughter turned to me when Greg was talking about our story from stage and said, do you ever get tired of hearing this? And then she goes through her perspective on it. And she's like, as long as our story keeps, she ends with, as long as our story keeps helping people, we're going to continue to tell it. So I've just seen, not only have I seen the story is the beginning of the book, but it's more the journey I've been on with Jesus in the last 19 years. And you know what? I'm living free, man. I've found not only forgiveness, but freedom. And I don't know a lot of Christians, honestly, that walk around in freedom. You know, life with Jesus, he said, I came to give you life to the fullest, not just a ticket to heaven someday, that can start today. And I've been finding it. I continue to find it. I continue every day to become more of who he's created me to be. And there's such life in that, man. So I got to share it. I have to share it. And I'm hopeful that it's going to help a lot of people.
Yeah. This is the Why Me Project podcast. So why me? Did you have a moment where those words either entered your mind as a thought or something that you said out loud, God, why me?
Yeah, I guess I should have thought about that knowing I was going to be on this podcast.
It's not the rest of your story podcast. Come on.
I know. It's
yeah,
why me.
It's a why me podcast.
You know, I honestly, the first question that came up was not as necessary, and I'll answer your question, not necessarily why me. But it was the why question. Why did this happen?
Yeah.
Why did I do what I did? That was the big piece. There wasn't like, why me? I'm not responsible for this or anything there. But I'm honestly pretty blown away. You know, my story didn't turn out like most do when you do what I've done. And I don't want to just throw out a bunch of church words, but the relationship I have with my daughters today, unbelievable. Unbelievable. The relationship that Stacy and I have today, unbelievable. I mean, she says in the book, he's not perfect. I'm not either. We still fight, blah, 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 blah. I mean, she probably don't want me to tell that 6 months ago, she came down the steps and she looked at me and she said, we're done. I'm like, what? Over what? If that didn't kill it, how is whatever this is going to? And
it was the garbage, right?
I don't remember what it was, honestly. Not that it didn't have merit. I'm not going to say that. You may watch this. But, you know, I kind of in some ways ask myself every day, why me? You know, why do you allow me to be part of such an incredible story? Why do you let me be the one that gets to point people to a path that truly does lead them to freedom like they've never experienced before in their life? Oh. Why would you, you know, I don't have the best resume. I am and have been a broken mess. I don't have it all figured out. I don't have the MDiv that most senior pastors have that I've told, you know, I've told I'm supposed to have. So there's a lot of that. I'm very humbled by it. But I think it's most in the context of, for some reason, God allowed me to keep my family, keep my wife, keep my life, and allows me to be able to speak hope into people, you know, almost every single week.
The rest of your story out May the 7th, mark that down on your calendar, livetorescue.com. You can find, Pastor Greg on the socials. My friend, appreciate you taking some time and, sharing your heart. And, Isaac, we're watching you, and we're going to make sure that you treat Greg's, daughter great, because if not, we're going to show up.
The Canadians are coming.
The Canadians are coming.
I'm going to make sure he watches this now.
Brother, this is great. Thank you for taking some time.
Thank you so much. Honored to be with you guys.
I'm just going through my notes.
I mean, there's a lot of notes to take. That was a lot to say.
What you want people to get out of it, dealing with your past, that we all have a story. Like, there's so many different nuances of the conversation that we had. And I think that there are some questions maybe that are still out there, but also leave that for the book, because I'm guessing that with the stories he's already told us, he's going to have answers to them.
Yeah, I think so. I definitely appreciated the honesty, the transparency, as we mentioned. Yeah. Because that's a hard story to share. Like, hi, I'm Pastor Greg and I had an affair. Like, yeah. How do you even come back from that?
No.
Like, where do you go?
Yeah.
So. Yeah. That's my takeaway, guys.
And.
But isn't it incredible?
He was great, though. He really was.
Yes. And it's incredible that we serve a God who still loves us no matter what we do, forgives us. And yeah. He is truly a God of second chances.
Hmm. Yeah. You're not too far gone. And that's also a good reminder. Mm-hmm. And that even when you think, you know, you've fallen off the path or you've gone around, turn around, and he's with you every step of the way. So it's a good reminder for that too. Follow us on all the socials. We encourage you to do that. Become a projector. You
yes.
can sign up. We send out free t-shirts. You could follow us on the socials. We should get t-shirts.
We really should. We should. Okay. We'll work on that.
Yeah. That's Holly's code word for Johnny. It's never going to happen, but we're going to work on that. It's just to shut me up.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, that's also what she says. When it's, we'll work on that. We'll see what happens. Whether it's Twitter, Instagram, follow us on the YouTube, like, subscribe. And if there's a guest that you want us to have a conversation with, make sure you let us know as well.
Absolutely. Also, don't forget, you can check out more at faithstrongtoday.com.